Welcome to More Than Tracy Turnblad, the podcast about fat representation in entertainment and media. I'm Abby, she, her.
I'm Luz, he, they, and we are two 20-something plus-size creatives trying to figure out our place in the industry and the world.
Today is part three of our Fat Trope Deep Dive series. It is the final part, and today we are getting into the last, like, kind of big overarching trope, which is the inspirational. We'll do more micro tropes later, but this is the last one for this kind of a reintro season. And we've just got one more episode next week, and then we're going to be taking a little break while I finish my term papers. But then we will be back with weekly episodes in the end of May. So now you know everything that's coming down the pike. Luz, this is your first episode back from top surgery.
Yes, it is.
How are you feeling?
I'm so excited to be back. I am pretty happy with my results so far. Obviously, like, recovery is hard and it takes some time to, like, regain mobility, and not being able to move around as much has been difficult. But, like, there's already been a lot of positive things as well, just, like, with, you know, having less dysphoria in shirts and stuff like that. And I actually got stared at the other day, which was really funny.
Slay.
Yeah, I got a glance that was just somebody trying to figure out what I was, I think. Which is, like, one of the first times that that's happened to me. And I was like, okay, that feels a little odd, but, like, also good. I'm just kind of, like, having a very reflective moment after recovery and having a lot of time to myself and having some free time. So that's been really good. It's been very different from my life in New York for the past, you know, year and a half.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Amazing. I am back from LA and I also have nothing serious to do, so I've just been on TikTok a lot. If anyone didn't hear about this, I lost my passport and I had to spend 2 extra weeks in LA. Oh no, 2 extra weeks in a beautiful sunny place where my long distance boyfriend lives. But, like, the passport of it all sucked. I also didn't actually lose it. Well, I did. I left it outside of his building in my purse, and then the office was closed for the next 2 days, so I missed my flight before I could get it back. Then I booked a new flight, applied for a new passport, reported it lost on Monday, and the building office didn't open again until Tuesday, at which time I got my passport back. But now I had to give it to the government because that's how it works. So I have a new one, but I lost all my stamps. I'm sad about it. And I'm back in the UK now, where it's misty and rainy and not as nice, but it's okay because I have lots of time to scroll on my phone, which brings me to a little catch up in the fat internet world of what's been going on. First of all, Lizzo quit and then unquit, sort of. I think she's going through it right now, to be honest, because then she, after that, like, published this really emotional Tumblr post about how she, like, has trouble feeling her feelings, which is, like, all well and good, but it does seem like she is having a time right now. And yeah, that was very interesting for her to be like, I'm so done with this. But then that sort of brought people out of the woodwork to, like, support her again.
Right.
And then she was like, well, thanks for the support. I just meant I'm done with the haters. It's like, were you not always?
Interesting. Yeah.
It feels like she made a decision, a very emotional, spontaneous decision to quit without consulting her PR team. And then the PR team was like, girl, what? And she changed her mind. That's what it feels like to me.
Okay. That's a really good point. I had not thought about that.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I guess I hope she's okay. I think we've talked about it on here before. Like, we don't condone everything that happened in the lawsuit and all the accusations, but we also don't believe that that is open season on Lizzo and an excuse to be fat phobic. And it doesn't mean that body positivity is dead and was never a thing. And if you want to hear more about that, it's all on Patreon from the last many months.
Yep.
Okay. There's actually so much that's been going on. So this dude, Leo Skeppy, who I guess is kind of like tough love motivational content guy on TikTok, made this video that was essentially a subtweet of a video that Samira made. Do you know about this? She was just talking about JCPenney, and she made this whole video about how JCPenney's not size inclusive. She went there, she evaluated it, gave them a lot of free advice on how to set up their store better and market to plus size people. And then he took umbrage with that video somehow and made this video that's essentially like a subtweet of it. Like, he didn't directly respond, but he said a lot of stuff in there that was very fat phobic. He said, oh, you're complaining about these brands, like, stop focusing and complaining about the brands. Like, that's like, the implication was like, that's terrible to do. Maybe we can put the audio in here.
A brand not making your size in something does not give you grounds to talk shit and degrade the brand. Brands are allowed to want a certain look and image with their products. They are allowed to make things for the people they want to make them for. I've been seeing too many people talking shit recently, and it's pissing me off. People are allowed to have preferences, and brands are allowed to create an image with what they want and have a specific type of person wear what they have. Not everybody needs to be catered to by everything and everyone. And this is a lesson I had to learn when I was fucking fat. I used to think clothes just weren't flattering. No, babe, the body wasn't fucking flattering.
But yeah, like, not only is he caping for the brands, he is also talking about, like, fat people in this way where he's literally like, fix your body, not the clothes. Or then he goes on to say, why don't you just focus on the brands that do make your size, right? And it's like, first of all, there are so few. Second of all, the clothes are ugly, and that's not my fault that I'm fat, so the clothes are ugly. And they just look bad on you. Oh, sorry. About those cold shoulder tops, man? Like, come on.
Yeah, no. They're not the style. Like, I'm sorry.
Also, you're a man. Like, the men's plus size clothes, they're boring, but they're not actively ugly and ridiculous.
Yes.
They're not giving you the cutesy florals and the Disney shirts, so.
Yep, anyway. They're not giving you the paisley.
Right.
Like, Jesus.
Oh, that takes me back because people are talking about how tankinis are supposedly coming back in.
Yep.
And one of my first bathing suits when I was in like fifth or sixth grade, having total boobs, basically the same body I have now, was a paisley pink tankini.
Ah!
Which actually was kind of cute, but I wore that shit every single day until I jumped in the pool and the bottoms fell off.
Yeah, that happens to the best of us. I also had a tankini, a paisley tankini, and it was blue and purple. Not blue and purple, blue and brown. The classic.
Oh, we should post pics of our paisley tankinis.
Yes, I certainly will. Like, tankinis were my religion and my life. I only wore tankinis to the swimming pool after, when I was 5, my friend's mom told her that I was too fat to wear a swimsuit. So.
That bitch.
Yeah, fucking bitch. And I had worn, I was wearing, I think, a bikini at that point. I'm not sure. It was some sort of, like, you know, typical, like, block bikini for a child. Yeah. And then I wore tankinis from that point on so that it could kind of obscure my stomach a little bit more. I actually think I may have been wearing a one piece, but it was like tight. You know what I mean? And the tankini that I had was a little looser.
Yeah, no, same. That's why I wore tankinis. And also that my torso is very long. So one pieces just never fit me. Like, my one piece that I have now is, it's like for swimming laps because I like to swim laps. And it fits my torso, but it's too wide on the sides because I have no butt, but I have a long torso. So, yeah.
I have a very similar problem. Anytime I would try to put one pieces on, they would be very, like, very tight from top to bottom, but I would still do it.
Yeah. No, I think they're so cute. I love them. I actually really want, like, a classic sleek black one, but, like, they're so, I just don't want to buy them online because they never fit my torso.
Yep.
And especially the ones that are like cheeky now, it's like, that's just showing everything for me.
That's something that I'm sort of coming to terms with in recovery right now, that I don't think I'm the type of person who's ever going to be comfortable showing a ton of skin. And I thought maybe I would be if I didn't have boobs anymore. Nah. No. I'm still not. I just don't think that's me.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And I'm trying to become okay with that. And that doesn't mean that I like hate my body or that I'm not confident.
Right.
I have never liked showing my body at all.
Yeah, I get that.
Yep.
back to Leo Skeppy real quick.
Yes.
just the last thing that I wanted to say is that, like, the latest on this is that he apologized. And he had talked in that first video, as you heard, about how he had lost weight. And he was like, that's what I had to do to whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's this sort of empowerment, yep, self-improvement message. But anyway, yeah, like, there was a big conversation about formerly fat people being the most fat phobic. And Leo then makes this apology video where he's like, I need to question my biases and blah, blah, blah. And it was kind of faux sincere. But he was also like, I think the point I was making stands. And like, I think he felt misunderstood because what he was trying to say was like, don't put your energy into something that doesn't serve you.
Okay.
And just go where you're wanted and like, don't dwell on the negativity kind of thing. But what he ended up saying was, fat people, you fucking suck and you don't deserve to have clothes. So, okay, Leo, I guess I'll walk around naked. But you know what? All of us want to. So that's not fair.
Yeah. The thing is, it's really easy for him to say that. It's very easy for him to say, go where you're wanted. Stop thinking about the things that are not made for you.
Well, he said that as an example, his own shoe size. He's a shoe size 16. And he was like, well, I go where I'm wanted and I don't dwell on how no shoe companies make shoes for me.
Well, is a size 16 the average in the U.S.?
No, I guess it's like a really big shoe size.
Yeah, that's my question. Because if you're a person who's a size like 16 to 20 and you're looking for clothes, like,
you're the average body size in America. Yeah. And if you can't find shit, that does not make sense.
Right.
It can still be frustrating to not be able to find your shoe size when you have like a really just uncommon shoe size, small or big. But that's like not the same thing, you know?
Right. That's a good point. And I also feel like, hey, Leo, maybe if you did actually use your voice to ask the shoe companies to do better, some of them would start making your size.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? And to discourage people from using like the one power we have, which is essentially like lobbying these companies by like dangling our consumer dollars above their head. That's like the only power we have right now. Look at what our fucking voting choices are. Like, it's Joe Biden or Trump. That's your only choice. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
A lot of people are feeling very politically powerless and ineffectual. A lot of people are feeling very like sort of disenfranchised. A lot of people are broke and feel like, you know what I mean? Like, this is just a moment where a lot of Americans are feeling like, you know, I have no power. But the one power that we actually do have is essentially being our version of corporate lobbyists. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
it feels like a relationship that's like lobbyist politician rather than a relationship that is like emotional. And I feel like telling people don't spend your energy on the ones that don't want you, that's like an emotional, that's advice for a relationship. That's dating advice.
Absolutely. That's friendship advice. That's
right
to do with your social circle.
It's interpersonal, but brands aren't people, and he's defending them like they are. It's like,
brands are not fucking people.
It's so fucking neoliberal. Really, all of fat phobia is. It's neoliberal at best. It's conservative at worst. So if you consider yourself like a liberal or a leftist and you don't like capitalism or neoliberalism or, you know what I mean? Like, fat phobia is that. It like is a manifestation of that. So
absolutely.
Some people have even said it's like getting towards fascism because it's like the control of the body. But again, I'm reading Foucault.
Right.
Yeah. And then Leo ended up going to Snapchat and making another video where he was like kind of making fun of people. He was like, oh, fat phobia, I want to make a joke so bad that's like how I'm not scared of fat people. You saw this? Yeah.
I saw that video. I did not see the original, but I saw the video he made after the apology where he was like, he literally paused in the middle of when he was talking and he was like, be careful, be careful.
No, yeah.
Brother. If you have to tell yourself to be careful, like, while you're talking shit about fat people, like,
No, but he's clearly making fun of people because he didn't have to say be careful out loud. He said, oh, I better not say this because they're going to call me fat phobic. Like, he was making fun of that. So.
Right.
Yeah. I just can't believe people didn't know because I went on his page once. So one of my mutuals and I talked about it. And oh, my God, she mentioned that, like, he's always been fat phobic and he has a whole podcast that's all about how, quote, your lack of discipline makes you ugly, end quote. And when I went to his page after I watched that video, that was the first thing that I saw. Like, it was a few videos ago, he was saying your lack of discipline makes you ugly. So he's been like this and people didn't pick up on it. But I think this could be a good lesson to us that, like, your lack of discipline makes you ugly is a fatphobic, like, dog whistle, you know?
Yeah.
Are there fatphobic dog whistles? I think there are.
Yes, of course.
If we can agree, which I think we do on this podcast, that fatphobia is something that deserves a dog whistle, then there definitely are some dog whistles, such as I want an active partner, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah. Fuck.
Yeah. Anyway, yep. that's what's up with Leo Skeppy. And I think my takeaway from all of this is, like, I'm actually feeling great because it's like, oh my God, there are still people who don't want to talk about fat people this way. And I've been getting so much hate lately. I feel like the majority of people just think, like, all fat people should go die. Like, that's, you know what I mean? And I've been seeing so many people, like, with all the Ozempic and everything, shitting on fat people for that. Like, it just has felt lately like, oh, everyone thinks like my trolls. And this was a reminder that a lot of people don't think like my trolls.
I'm so glad, because it's very, it gets very, like, tunnel vision very quickly when you're getting a lot of hate on the internet.
Yeah. And for a while, there was every few months a video like this would pop up and everybody would be stitching in being like, this is why women have eating disorders. This is why we hate our bodies, blah, 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 you know. And that just hadn't happened in a long time. And I thought it was over. I thought we'd gone into a new era. But the fact that it can still happen actually gives me a lot of hope that I really needed. So overall, I think it's a positive because so much of the internet was, like, mad at him.
Yeah, it was like, boo, the fuck?
Exactly.
Yeah, we have made progress since the early 2000s. And I don't think that there's a way that we're going to completely erase that progress.
Yeah.
I'm happy to say.
And that's a very positive thing to say before we go into this episode, which is sort of about the illusion of progress in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because today we are talking about the inspirational trope. I want to go in order of the doc, so you start. Is that cool?
Perfect. So I feel like the first thing of note about the inspirational trope is that it kind of can intertwine with the sad fat trope. And often I think a lot of examples in popular media kind of combine the two, that there's something, you know, really tragic about this person who is fat. And while they might be trying to lose weight, that's usually, like, typically what the inspirational trope shows up in. There's also other things that it can show up in, with just, like, fat people doing things that you wouldn't expect them to do, or kind of like the brave fat person that you see a lot in social media. I find that in TV, it often intersects with the sad, especially through, like, reality shows, which I thankfully have not subjected myself to a ton of, but I definitely used to watch The Biggest Loser when I was younger. I also regrettably would watch Super Size versus Super Skinny.
Oh.
I would just watch the clips, and then it would, like, you know, it would cut off before I could watch the whole episode, but I would watch the clips that were available. And I feel like both of these tropes also apply to, like, My 600-Pound Life and, you know, the 1,000-Pound Sisters, those kinds of things. Because on My 600-Pound Life and 1,000-Pound Sisters, these folks are actively trying to lose weight, or, like, want to. That desire is expressed. So that is supposed to be inspirational to the audience.
The fact that they want to lose weight, or what they're actually doing to lose weight?
The fact that they want to lose weight as someone who is, like, a larger fat person, I think. The fact that they want to lose weight, like, this is specifically with, you know, in the context of, like, a disabled fat person.
So does that mean, like, the audience has a perception that it's out of reach and they're commending the person for not,
yes,
for even tackling this, like, mountain that's going to be so hard to scale or whatever?
Yep, that is what I think. That's how I interpret it.
Which is so interesting, because I think there are people both say losing weight is easy and losing weight is really, really, really hard as a way to, like, to shame or mock fat people. Like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yes.
It's hard and you should be able to do hard things, or it's easy, why can't you just do it?
Right. That's always so interesting. It's never like in the middle somewhere. And I think that people do tend to find disabled fat people to be more inspirational generally.
This like is a disability thing of inspiration porn.
Yes. And that applies to all sorts of disabled people, like of all sizes, that just like doing things by yourself or like attempting to try new things physically often become a source of inspiration when able-bodied people are watching.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think that like there's this idea that you'd stop being disabled if your fatness went away. That the fatness is causing the disability, or that the fatness is the disability, and like you get all your mobility back if you were skinny. So I feel like there's this sort of fantasy in able-bodied people's heads of like fixing the disabled person, and that's a really common media trope too. Like I always think of Heidi. Did you ever read Heidi? Yeah, so in the end of Heidi, the disabled girl who's in the wheelchair like walks. And it's this huge thing, and I think it's the idea of disability makes them so uncomfortable and they're so afraid of becoming disabled themselves that the idea that you can fix it is really, really comforting.
Absolutely. I think that's right on the money. I mean, like, we as a culture are so afraid of disability, and that kind of connects with everything that we're afraid of, like aging. The obsession we have with, staving off aging at this point in time, like, it is so disability related. We are terrified to lose any sense of autonomy, also because our culture is so highly independent. Like, we really, really value independence. We do not teach each other how to rely on each other as like
No.
a community, as friends, as family members.
Especially because relationships are seen as so transactional these days. Like when people
Yes.
talk about like I shouldn't have to go pick up my friend from the airport, or like what am I gonna get in exchange, or like I Venmo'd you, can you please send me like $1.50 for that coffee or whatever, you know? Not that coffee
Yes.
costs $1.50, but you know, it'll be a charge as small as this and down to the cent. And I've been guilty of that too, especially when I'm very broke. And I feel like there's this sort of idea that you have to pay for care or you have to pay for all these things. You can just get an Uber to the airport. You can just hire a moving company. But it's like we're all so broke right now. Like it feels like every time I get online, it's just people being like, "Why am I not making enough money to live?" So I think we have to turn back more to community. That or we have to figure out how we can all make more money, but I don't know because there's a lot of forces working against that, I think.
Yeah, we're gonna have to rely on each other, or we're just gonna die, to be honest. And I think we will rely on each other when it comes to that point. I think that we always end up relying more on each other when it gets down to that, to, a life or death situation.
We did in COVID. Hello. Like, we've
Yeah.
seen that we can.
Absolutely. But it's just not something that specifically American culture uplifts or values at all.
I've said this, I think I've said this on here before, but when you complain to an American that like something there's some hardship in your life or some struggle, they're like, "Well, you could fix that if you worked hard." Like, and if it's like, well, you know, a lot of people work hard and still don't get it, they're like, well, you just have to work harder than them. You know, if you say like 95 plus percent of people gain the weight back once they've lost a significant amount of weight, they'll just say, well, you just have to be part of that 5% that doesn't. Like, that's the solution. Be exceptional. And I found since coming here that if you complain to a person who's not American about that, and I am generalizing, by the way, a lot of nationalities of everybody I've met. But if you're like, hey, this thing is really hard and it's happening, they're like, I'm so sorry. What do you need? Like, it's, you know what I mean? It's a very uniquely American thing.
Okay, that's really interesting to think about because I feel like a lot of people that I've met have real trouble contending with like the negative emotions of people that they care about.
Yes.
And it's just I didn't know that that could be like a kind of part of American culture. I hadn't thought about it like that before. That's so interesting. But yeah, it's really hard to see a fat person and like acknowledge that it is very hard to be fat.
Without the solution is not stop being fat. Here's how you stop. I have these things that worked for my friend over here who went gluten-free and lost 150 pounds. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep. It's really hard to not just like just take that person at face value, like acknowledge their feelings, be with them in that moment, and acknowledge what they're feeling without trying to like cobble anything together to fix it.
Yes.
That's really interesting. And that kind of makes me feel a little bit less harsh about people that are like that find weight loss inspirational, I guess.
Yeah.
Or that want fat people to lose weight. That makes me feel a little bit softer about it right now, because it might not always come from a place of like hatred for fat people.
It's like I want to solve your problem. It's usually
Yeah.
well-intentioned. And also a lot of them genuinely believe if you're fat, you're a ticking time bomb and you're going to die. So they're like, I want to save your life.
So it's high stakes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like genuinely coming from a place of like, I want you to live longer and be, able to be in the world.
Right. And that's especially true for larger fat people who are
Yes.
disabled. Especially true. Because it is really interesting what you said. I think that we often don't like think about the fact that like disability can cause fatness and those kinds of things. It's very, especially in shows like My 600-Pound Life, it is just portrayed that this person is having issues with mobility because they're fat,
Right,
or
right.
that this person is having this health issue, their back hurts because they're fat. And
Right, right.
there is no nuance in that with that kind of media.
And there's no acknowledgement that like a condition could be causing their fatness,
Absolutely.
whether it's a disability that a lot makes it harder for them to move, or whether it's like diabetes causes people's bodies to store fat. I also
Right.
saw a video today about microplastics, which are in everything. They're in our blood.
Oh, God.
And how they are obesogens. So
Oh.
that's why so many people report when they come to the US, they automatically gain weight. This is the theory that I saw on this random ass TikTok. Like, please don't quote me. I don't know the science. But
Okay.
this is what Fran also was talking about in our health episode about like environmental factors, right? So like that's part of it too.
That's really interesting. Wow. I also think when talking about sort of weight loss shows, it's important to mention Biggest Loser, specifically for like the spectacle of fat people suffering, because that is seen as inspirational. Like,
Oh my God, that's such an American thing too.
yes, like putting yourself through unimaginable suffering, and you can clearly tell that this person is in pain, you know, whether they end up crying, they're doubled over, like moaning, groaning, throwing up, you know, those kinds of things.
Oh.
And putting yourself through that intense sort of self-harm is like seen as really inspirational, because it means you're working so hard, you're working that much harder to lose the weight, you know?
Yeah, and it's also kind of a part of it, I think, is penance and punishment. Like that's always a feeling that I get from seeing that stuff. It's like we want people to atone for their fatness by putting themselves through extra pain, which is actually wild because being fat is already painful enough. Like you're already, you know what I mean? And I think that's clear. But it's like in order to overcome your fatness, you have to go through pain. And that's why people will respect you for dieting, even if you're fat, even if it doesn't make you lose weight. Like, that's why I was a vegetarian for so long, because when I was vegetarian and I told people that, they were like, "You're denying yourself of something? Wow, I almost respect you, even though you're
Like,
fat."
yep. It's a very weird, like, sort of, I feel like, socially Christian thing.
It's so Christian. Yes. I mean, it's
Yeah.
Jewish too, honestly. Like there that I mean, I literally have a religion where we fast, and I'm about to go do the holiday where we go 8 days without eating bread.
That's always one of the first things that comes up when I'm thinking about the way that people look at fat people and fat suffering specifically. I always get this like sort of spidey sense and sort of
Yeah.
religious spidey sense.
Absolutely.
But yeah, there are a lot of shows that like profit off extreme weight loss, or just kind of showcasing fat people attempting with little success to lose weight, or with a lot of success. And it's very, very interesting. It's been sort of a booming business for a while, and I unfortunately used to watch those things when I was younger. But thankfully, I have freed myself.
Yay.
I'm actually
Oh my
curious
God.
to, this is just like for our viewers. I want y'all to tell me what your, like, I guess, guilty pleasure weight loss show was at one point. If you ever watched, what was your show? What show did you torture yourself with? Let me know.
I guess this isn't a weight loss show, but I just watched this video of this girl who had this account on YouTube dedicated to her glow up. I don't remember her last name, but her first name is Olivia with an A. And she had documented her like journey to try to glow up and her setbacks and failures and like the eating issues it caused her. And she finally just made this video that was like, glowing up ruined my life. And that I watched, even though it was extremely triggering.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Wow. That is interesting. I feel like I've kind of seen a lot of people say that recently, which is, I like that we're talking about it.
It's a cycle. It's a cycle. It depends, because it was so unbelievably relatable, and I'm sure you would relate too. Just like the amount of anguish, the huge feelings, the crying, the breakdowns. I am so regulated now that watching that, I was like right back there, and I was like, oh my God, I forgot that like eating one extra strawberry could make me have that kind of meltdown and hate myself
Yes.
so much and so deeply. And now, I mean, I don't necessarily like love my body for how it looks every day, but like I don't actively hate myself in the same way that I did then. Does that make sense?
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not in love with how I look. However, I also don't hate myself. I'm kind of like more neutral. I'm more neutral leaning positive about
Yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's all I got.
Yeah, the whole inspiration porn concept is definitely applied to fat people a lot, often with disability, as you said, which is, I think, what it was sort of coined to apply to. And that's how it intersects with the sad, but I do also believe it intersects with the funny in its own way and with female empowerment. And empowerment generally, but like, I think it's mostly marketed to and catered toward women. So basically, I think there's a version of the inspirational that like positions itself as being inspirational or empowering because it subverts the sad directly. But then sometimes that trope is just the funny in disguise, or sometimes it comes off a little bit patronizing. And again, this is exemplified by the You're So Brave, because I think You're So Brave sort of runs the gamut of all types of inspirational trope, whether it's somebody losing weight, whether it's somebody wearing a crop top and liking their body and not trying to lose weight. Like,
Yes.
the common denominator is there's a recognition that like fatness is a bad thing or a hardship, and that it's something that has to be overcome either mentally or physically. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yes.
So to get started here, on the inspiring, we can't believe a fat person showed their body kind of vibe of empowerment, inspiration porn, I looked into the Dove Real Beauty campaign. There's a lot of academic literature on it. And a lot of it addresses post-feminism, which is basically the idea that, like, we did it. We hit, like, we met all the goals of feminism. It's been achieved. Men and women are equal. And therefore, like, any further iterations of feminism are kind of obsolete. And it's also often characterized by an essentialist emphasis on femininity, as well as on the career woman. It's all about sort of like achieving economic parity with men and then empowerment through what you buy. And where this applies to beauty is very obvious, right? Because it's like, oh, I'm an empowered feminist by buying this like skincare product to make me look younger.
Absolutely.
The idea is that you can be empowered through your purchasing power and through consumerism. Obviously, like the whole inspiration porn, real beauty, you're beautiful as you are, that's been tied in with capitalism from the very beginning because making people feel good sells products. Although, so does tragedy. So, like, making people feel bad also sells products. But making people feel good, they discovered, was a new strategy to sell products that really made the brand Dove stand out.
Incredible.
So, in 2002, This is a quote. Unilever reassessed Dove's marketing strategy with its public relations firm Edelman and its advertising / marketing agency Ogilvy & Mather to create a unified global image to generate brand loyalty. Discussing her view of the global brand, Ogilvy's chairman and chief executive officer Shelley Lazarus stated, "It means figuring out what is universal about the brand, those things that transcend where it happens to be manufactured or where it started." Lazarus's statement indicates that in today's market, a brand needs to reach audiences' emotions by building a platform that drives ideological alliance with the corporate identity before the act of material consumption. And I have such a strong memory of when Dove came out with like this campaign in 2004. And I was a kid and I had been using Dove conditioner for years because it was the only thing that detangled my fine hair. But when I saw that, I was like, oh, yay, Dove is a good brand. Like, that's the thought, you know? So you're like, oh, they stand for my values. I'm going to keep shopping there. Or start right. shopping there if you don't already. I do still use Dove deodorant to this day. There's some on my shelf right now. But yeah, so it's this idea of like empowerment comes from the brand that's aligned with your values and you express that through consumerism. And there's been a lot of academic work that sort of unpacks the relationship between consumerism and female empowerment and brand identity and post-feminism, blah, blah, blah. I read this one article that talks about semiotics, which is basically like the study of signs. So it's like, what is the brand signposting? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because in media, that's what you have is like signs or symbols.
Right.
Okay. So the quote from this article is, "It could be argued that this sophisticated semiotic strategy of empathy gains advertisers a double profit. In the words of Peterson, they look like champions and oust the competition by outselling and making others look bad or worse than them. Indeed, empathetic advertising helps consumers not feel guilty by consuming products from good companies." So exactly what I said.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I feel like this Real Beauty campaign in the 2000s started this like, oh, we can sell people things by making them feel good about their bodies or telling mm-hmm. them they don't have to change while still selling them a certain product that maybe they're already used to buying, or maybe they think, I'm going to change out of love for myself, which is a very post-feminist idea. So then you get like the social media of it all, of course, the body positivity movement and influencers. And through this, there was like this embracing of your supposed flaws, right? Like
right.
what I always think of is the Rachel Hollis Tiger Stripes post that like made her blow up, where she talked yes. about her stretch marks.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, wait. Let me see if I can find that.
It's iconic. We're going to post it on the Instagram.
Oh, we definitely should. Her inspiring caption was, "I have stretch marks and I wear a bikini. I have a belly that's permanently flabby from carrying 3 giant babies and I wear a bikini. My belly button is saggy, which is something I didn't even know was possible before, and I wear a bikini," she wrote. And she talks about how these marks are because she was so blessed to bring children into the world, and the only man whose opinion matters knows she wants what she went through to look this way, which would be her husband, obviously. Then she goes along and says, "They aren't scars, ladies. They're stripes, and you've earned them. Flaunt that body with pride."
I love that. I love that.
I think it's funny because it sounds like stars and stripes. They aren't scars, they're stripes, right? Your grand old flag, etc. Which yes. we get back into the American capitalism of it all. But anyway, that was like a cultural reset to me. Suddenly people were all about, you know, embracing their flaws, and that ended up making some people a lot of money because obviously you want to go towards something that makes you feel better about yourself. But what I want to unpack is like, what is inspirational about that? It's her exposing something that a lot of people felt shame about and telling them it's okay. And it's inspirational because she's brave for posting this photo where she looks like a mom. And what's really interesting is Rachel Hollis is like one of the most fatphobic people ever. And you should listen to the Maintenance Phase episode about her book if you want more to know more about that. But I think some of the rhetoric of the "your tiger stripes are okay, love your body" kind of gets into a similar place of post-feminism where it's like at some point it's just like, you're beautiful, end of sentence, period. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yes, of course, it makes people feel better about their own bodies to see somebody who looks like them or somebody who's fatter than them and still is okay. It's reassuring. It's sort of the flip side of the disability thing, to be honest. It's like, oh, even if I do gain weight, I'm going to be okay. It's reassuring.
Yeah, it's like comforting your fear.
Right. But then the idea with that is that to overcome fat phobia, you ignore it and just be confident yourself and focus inwardly on yourself.
Yep, it's the individualism again.
Yes, the individualism strikes again. And that's a very, that's the very American capitalist bootstrapsy thing of like, oh, to get yourself out of fat phobia, you just have to stop believing in it. It's all in your head, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so we see that in media, like a lot of arcs of the lesson that's like all it takes is confidence. Movies like I Feel Pretty or shows where there's like a world without fat phobia, but yet the fat characters are still on the sidelines. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So I feel like the hyper-confident, probably hypersexual fat best friend is like the golden example of this. And this seems like kind of a specific trope, but it's like in every single comedy, like every single one. There's a fat best friend who's very hypersexual towards men and like very sexually aggressive, but it's like she's empowered and she thinks she's hot, so she does this. And how cool is that?
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of this media, she is successful because of her confidence. When the truth is, like, as a confident fat woman on the internet, it does not stop men from coming for your appearance at all. It does not make people attracted to you. I mean, and I consider myself confident. Probably a lot of people don't. But I've seen other confident fat women on the internet and they still get come for. And it doesn't change that, like, the beauty standard is one thing and you're not it, you know?
Right.
And I feel like when the fat character's size is either like not addressed or is effortlessly overcome with performative confidence, while there's still only thin bodies in like leading roles, it feels a little bit demeaning. Does that make sense?
Yes.
To me, it always feels that way. It feels like a little bit like you're trying so hard to make this person confident, to make them obsessed with themselves and their body, to make them love themselves, to make them sexually successful and voracious as a form of empowerment. But at the same time, like, you're not actually casting them as a lead and viewing them as a whole person. It's just a reminder. And that's why I think this is the inspirational trope, because functionally those characters are like, and remember, it's okay to be fat, because being fat doesn't mean you're not confident. Being fat doesn't mean that you won't have a good life, because if you're confident in fat, you will have a good life. And I think that is necessary to an extent, but I also think it feels really patronizing sometimes. Do you agree?
It does. Yeah. I think that I just get pissed off that the person is not typically given like more of a personality. Like, it's pretty much just like one-liners of being like, I'm hot, I'm sexy, or like, yeah, I've got this date with this guy later, you know? And I'm like, can we have like layers to this? What are your interests? What are your hobbies? Like, what do you do with your life?
Right. And often she's there to hype up the main character and be like, if I can be confident, girl, you can too. You know?
Exactly. Like, I have 5 dates lined up for this week and you're skinny, so get on it.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. So I think also sometimes this enables like a certain stereotype to play out as well, because like the truth is, while it is a subverting the tragic stereotype to make a fat person say hypersexual, it's also reinforcing the trope of fat people as insatiable and insatiably sexual, which is what I'm writing my dissertation on, which you probably know if you've ever listened to this podcast before, because I can't stop talking about it because I'm reading about it all the time now. But anyway, it does seem empowering on its face because it's subverting that tragic trope and you do get to see a fat woman be confident, own her sexuality, etc. But like, so often there are jokes snuck in at the expense of the character. So you have to consider, like, what's the piece of media's perspective versus what's the character's? Because, like, yeah, the character's positive, but is the piece of media sort of snickering at how positive she is? Is there a joke in there? I think Fat Amy is, like, the example of this. Because it can even read somehow to, I think maybe Fat Amy is more self-aware than some of these characters, because she, like, literally is like, and I do this to, even though I'm aware of fat phobia, she literally says that. But a lot of characters don't. And so when they don't, it comes across like maybe the person is clueless about how their size is perceived rather than like acknowledging that there is fat phobia in the world and then reclaiming it. Because the actual piece of media doesn't acknowledge that there's fat phobia in world, even though clearly there is. If the fat friend is saying to motivate her skinny friend, look how many dates I go on and you can't even go on one. Does that make sense?
Yep. That is the most common trope that I see in TV shows is that you can tell that the point of view of the writers is not from a place of respecting this fat person as a whole person. You can tell that there's sort of like a kind of snickering like behind the scenes.
It's either snickering or it's you're so brave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's like, wow, oh my god, good for you, girl. Go out and get so many men to have sex with you because you're so empowered. Wow, you are so brave to have the courage to do that even though you're fat.
Yeah.
That's what it's giving. And I feel like, similar to post-feminism, we could almost call this post-fat phobia because it's the idea that like, oh, fat phobia has been solved. At least on the surface, like ostensibly. But like, In effect, it's actually clearly not solved, because if it was solved, you wouldn't feel the need to push the fat person as so empowered. And I mean, I guess for post-feminism too, if there was no feminism, why would you need this trope of like, look, women can make money and spend it and buy things, you know?
Exactly. You wouldn't need to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, like, fat phobia is alive and well, and pretending it isn't just kind of feels like denial sometimes. And this actually takes us back to Leo Skeppy, that it's sort of the, oh, focus on the brands that do have your size, focus on the positive. It feels like it's a way to say, shut up about the ways that you're marginalized, because it makes the rest of us feel bad.
Yeah.
It feels like at the end of the day, what they want is like, stop bumming me out talking about how oppressed you are. Like, just focus on the positive. I'm used to seeing positive fat people who just want to be positive and inspire me, a person who's not as fat as they are, that I could be positive too, because hey, I even look better than them. And if they're positive, I'm definitely positive. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The you're bumming me out is very real.
Yep. Fat phobia is obviously alive and well, and it's alive and well in a lot of these shows that want to have their joke and eat it too. Mm-hmm. They want to have their joke and make the fat character eat it too. Eat cake too.
Yeah.
They want to have their body positivity and make the fat... Okay, whatever. Anyway. Anyway, but like the fact that fat phobia is still around, clearly, in the fact that you can even see... This is the only space for a fat character. We don't have multiple fat characters, despite like 70%+ of the U.S. being medically considered overweight. We don't, you know? So it's just a kind of a weird contradiction or cognitive dissonance. And I read this really great article about Melissa McCarthy, who like definitely exemplifies this in a lot of ways. And it was kind of contrasting like her celebrity persona as like a cool and glamorous celebrity woman, and also her, you know, characters that she plays.
Right.
So this article was called Class Corpulence and Neoliberal Citizenship, and it's a study of Melissa McCarthy on Saturday Night Live. The argument of this paper is that the general cultural acceptance that the media promotes negative body images has led to contradictory narratives about obese bodies. They are signs of individual failure that must be disciplined into conformity, but overtly stigmatizing and mocking them contradicts discourses of inclusivity, acceptance, and female empowerment. So then he goes on to talk about how Melissa McCarthy bears an inordinate variety of cultural meanings, signifying discourses of fat acceptance and the normalization of overweight femininity, while also offering an image of out-of-control feminine excess that threatens the very fabric of bourgeoisie society. McCarthy's contradictions mirror the contradictions of obesity in the USA, where fat shaming is big business on tabloid covers and on television programs such as The Biggest Loser, but where a bevy of discourses, from soap adverts to Meghan Trainor's 2014 hit All About That Bass, insist that inner beauty and self-confidence are more important than thinness.
Mm.
And his theory about this is that the rise of neoliberalism has basically contributed to this. So basically, he says then that like neoliberalism kind of has to designate what kinds of bodies are dangerous and must be literally reshaped in order to embody responsible citizenship, and what bodies are appropriate as sites of self-confidence and inner beauty.
Mm.
And his argument about that is that it's classed. So the idea is that Melissa McCarthy is a high-class, plus-size woman. She looks glamorous. She wears designer clothes. She is literally a celebrity, like a wealthy celebrity, right?
Right.
But the characters that she plays are often coded as low class. And he says of SNL, when her performances on the show are at their most over the top in terms of sex, violence, or gluttony, her costuming relies on an equally excessive vision of tackiness and lack of good taste. McCarthy's humor has become synonymous with not only raunchy transgression, but trashiness and the flouting of middle-class respectability. But the real McCarthy provides an uplifting affirmation that the culture can accept an overweight woman as a movie star, obscuring and diminishing the stigmatizing class and body politics of her over-the-top performances of crass obesity.
Mm.
So that is a fascinating take, which I actually really agree with, and I think plays perfectly into the hand of post-feminism, where it's like they're selling us the ability to become the higher classed, empowered fat woman instead of being the lower classed, mocked one.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think Melissa McCarthy is such a fascinating case, as are all fat celebrities, really. In the idea that you can become this thing that's like empowered under a post-feminist lens, especially, but that in order to do that, you have to perform the negative and demeaning low-class stereotypes of fatness and put on this like sort of costume.
Yeah.
So in order to be inspirational, you have to debase yourself.
Mm.
And I just listened to the Celebrity Memoir Book Club episode that covered Rebel Wilson's book, which I wasn't sure if I was going to read, but after listening to it, I really want to. And she mentioned a bunch of times that her mom was really unsupportive of her acting career because her mom hated seeing her being laughed at. And as someone whose mom has said the exact same thing to me, that like really came through for me, because it is that. She's a very ambitious person, Rebel Wilson. She wanted success. She was going to do whatever it took. And what it took was like demeaning and debasing herself. But she feels empowered through it because it's given her this celebrity status, access to acting roles, access to the money she needed to eventually like use her resources to get thinner. So,
Wow.
Anyway, that's my capitalist conspiracy hour, anti-capitalist conspiracy hour.
That's fascinating.
God. So yeah, that's the inspirational. It can be sad inspirational of the overcoming of your fatness, or it can be the overcoming of societal fat phobia. But either way, the idea is it's a neoliberal, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, capitalist ass ideology, unfortunately. Although I'm not denying that there can be some real empowerment by, for example, fat people gaining access to the clothes that thin people already have access to.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So where do you think the inspirational can be positive?
I mean, I think in some ways it's definitely more positive than like the sad or the funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather folks have like, I guess, positive leaning feelings about fat people than negative leaning feelings. But I think that it's kind of like closer on the scale to, eventual acceptance. I think that it's getting closer, especially the sort of like when it's not centered around weight loss,
mm-hmm.
when it's centered around sort of a fat person accepting themselves or a fat person being very confident and that being inspirational. I think that to me is like the closest that we've gotten with like fat tropes in terms of just being a person who like can have joy in their life, you know, because for a long time, I feel like fat people were portrayed as sort of devoid of joy. Like that was not going to be something that you could experience in your life.
Or if they were portrayed as having joy, then it was for the audience to be mocked because it's so absurd that they could ever have it, which is the incongruity thing we talked about in the comedy episode.
Exactly. Yep. So it wasn't portraying it as something that's actually possible for fat people. It was right. Like, it's funny because it's impossible.
Exactly.
So I prefer this to the other two tropes, I would say, in right. most cases.
Absolutely. I agree with that for sure. And I do think that we talked in the last two fat trope deep dives about how it's really clearly written for thin gays. I don't think this one is as clearly written for thin people. I think there's an acknowledgement that like fat people are here and we should give them their little lip service and we should give them their moment. I don't think this trope would ever have existed if there were not fat people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like if there were not a lot of fat people who wanted to see it and liked it, I feel like this trope is kind of an acknowledgement that fat people are indeed a consumer force, which is like kind of what Dove found, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like this is the most humanizing of them all, but it is still a little bit objectifying to prop thin people up as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't hate the inspirational, but we can do better. And that brings us to our final episode of the season. Main character energy dropping next week. Come back then.
Woo!
Any more to say on the inspirational, or should we plug our social medias?
I guess just that you're so brave for wearing that top.
Wait, this top that I'm wearing right now, this was my mom's in the 70s. And she wore it until she gave it to me when I was in like middle school, maybe.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Isn't it cute?
I'm showing you. Oh my God, wait.
It's crop. I'm so confident.
Wait. You're an inspiration for wearing a crop top. God.
Thanks. Even though I only showed shoulders up in this video.
It's incredible. I love it.
Next time we should just do the whole video. I'll be naked. You can wear whatever makes you comfortable.
I will also be naked.
I actually don't like being full naked, but I do like showing my tits. But I only like showing them to me. I don't like walking down the street and feeling like people are looking at me. Because I never know if they're like, oh, gross. How could she dare show her boobs? Or if they're like, nice boobs.
Or if they're like, nice rack. Yeah.
But either way, it doesn't feel great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the inspirational. We will see you next week. You can find me at Abby Rose Morris on Instagram and Abby Rose Morris _ on Twitter.
And you can find me at Silly Goose Luz. That is Silly Goose LUZ on all social media. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of More Than Tracy Turnblad.
If you liked it, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
For more content, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/morethantracyt.
Follow us on social media at More Than Tracy T on everything. I'm Abby.
I'm Luz. And we are more than Tracy Turnblad.